Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 182 of the Functional Nerds podcast. And John?
Yes?
I got nothing.
That's good. That's fine. That's all good.
I used all my energy and all my crap last episode. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay to burn out. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And today, we have good friend, Mer Lafferty. Mer is... Mer is an author, a podcaster, and an editor. She has written several books and novellas. Her first professionally published book was The Shambling Guide to New York City, which is in bookstores now. And the sequel, The Shambling Guide 2, Ghost Train to New Orleans, will be out on March 4th. So probably by the time you're hearing this, or soon after, you can go and pick that one up too. So go and buy our books, people. Mer, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry Patrick has nothing left. I guess we'll just ignore him for the rest of the time.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, right. Well, emotionally, I do that anyway. But
well, sure.
We all do. But
and see, I was going to actually say that isn't the first book on sale right now, and people should just go buy it.
But you're not going to say it now that you're mad at me.
Well, no. If you're going to just ignore me.
Oh, okay. I'll pay attention to you, Patrick. Okay. Yes, the first book is on sale via ebook right now. So it is the first one is, if not free, at least cheap, in order to hook you into. Give sweet, sweet money for the second book.
Nice.
Right. I actually just bought that ebook because I read everything on my Kindle app. So I actually just bought book one when I saw that it came up. So, and I tried to encourage people on Twitter to go buy it as well. So,
yeah. See, I bought it.
Excellent.
When it was,
thank you.
I bought it when it was no full price because I support the author.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm cheap. So I wait to not support the author. But go and pick out the first book, and then you'll probably promptly go out. And it is a good strategy because I've certainly done that before where I buy the first book, you know, for the discounted price, and then I go and buy books two and three for full price. That's what they want you to do. So that's hopefully what you'll do. So there you go.
Let's hope it works.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. So Mer, thanks for joining us today. So obviously we're going to, you know, when we get into our main discussion, we will talk a little bit, talk mainly about your books that you have coming out. But what else is going on with Mer Lafferty? I feel like it's been a little while since we've talked to you.
It has been. Most of my focus last year was finishing up Ghost Train and various rounds of edits, as well as finishing my degree. I graduated in January from the Stone Coast writing program. Thank you. And so then lately it's just been recovering from all of that and then starting to work on a new book and work on promotion for Ghost Train to New Orleans. So busy promoting, but just basically recovering from 2 years of academic stuff.
May I ask what goes into the Stone Coast thing? Because that felt like intense, but intense in small patches.
Yes. Yes. It's a low residency program for fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, and popular fiction, which is what they call essentially genre fiction, romance, crime, science fiction, fantasy, mystery. And you go, it's low residency, meaning you fly to Maine twice a year for 10 days. And in those 10 days, you do two intense workshops and you go to lectures by professors and by graduating students and you go to readings and it's very long and exhausting 10 days.
Wow.
And this past one was the last one where I was actually in the graduating student chair where I had to be the one to do readings and do a lecture instead of be the one to take in all the wisdom. I had to actually dole out the wisdom. That was kind of scary.
That sounds like a great title for either like a memoir or something like that where it's like Mer Lafferty, doling out the wisdom.
Nice. That's right.
But you have to spell it like D-O-L-I-N, you know, apostrophe, Dolan Alcoholism.
That way they know I'm street.
Yes.
So does exactly. does that mean you're the there's an alternate cover for the book where it's just spelled Nolans?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what is your actual degree now then? What do you get from Stone Coast?
I have a Master's of Fine Arts in Popular Fiction from the University of Southern Maine.
So what was your goals in going in? Like, so now that you actually have the degree, was it purely just to become a better writer? I shouldn't say just to, that should always be the main thrust behind getting any sort of education, is to get better at whatever it is you're doing. But did you have other than just wanting to be a better writer, do you have other thoughts on what you'd like to do with your degree?
Mainly, I wanted to be a better writer. It's one thing that's weird about being out of school is if you don't have a dedicated writing group, it's hard to get people to read and comment on your stuff, and you know, people that you trust who will give you good, really good, deep comments. And I've had trouble finding that. And no, I just didn't pay for a really expensive workshop, but I wanted to learn from not only I wanted to go to a genre friendly place, and I wanted it to be smaller doses than like a six week Clarion thing, and I wanted it to be able to learn from other genres. You know, if you do take Clarion, you're not going to get a creative nonfiction or poetry or fiction education. Whereas in Stone Coast, you can attend any lecture you want. What workshops you participate in, that's a little tighter, but you can attend any lecture and I learned a lot. But it was nice having pro writers whose job it was to give me advice. And it was nice having two workshops every 6 months that would look and tear apart my stuff in a way that, you know, there was very little competition or anything. So I knew it was all going to be very creative, constructive criticism.
Well, and I've heard that like the Clarion, and there's also the one that's down in New Mexico.
Taos.
I've heard that those are great, and that people do get a lot out of them, but they also, because it's so intense, a lot of times the authors come out of it burned out and they don't write for a very long time.
I've heard that too. And that's one reason why I said I wanted it in smaller bites. Mm-hmm. The residency is overwhelming, but you can recover from that in a couple of days. You know, we heard scary stories about people who leave Stone Coast and don't write for a little while, and then they get in that habit of not writing. But luckily I have deadlines, so sure. I don't have that option.
Well, and you also had the magic spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly. Magic spreadsheet is what's keeping me going. As for the MFA, it's also nice knowing I have credentials to teach if I wanted to. I'm not sure how I feel about teaching full time, but it's nice to know that I can. I at least have one of those bits of credentials that they ask for.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is if you had aspirations to possibly teach. And, you know, I think with creative writing, I think there are a lot of opportunities to teach which aren't necessarily full time, where you can teach at a workshop, or you can teach at a summer course, or just like limited time kind of things. So it's good to have that that in your back pocket, you know. So cool.
Right.
Very cool. Congratulations. Yeah. I know that's a lot of work.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Okay. Cool. Very good. All right. Well, let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Patrick, why don't you go first this week?
I like books.
You do?
That's my pick of the week, books.
just in general books?
Yeah, I like them. People should read them.
Well, that's there you go. Big. Yeah, Patrick likes to do this of every fourth episode or so, like where he picks like fried chicken or or cough drops or something. You know, I don't think he really gets into the spirit of what Picks of the Week is all about. I think he's really, you know, he really like insults it. But anyway, all right, books. Well, you can't really get too insulting with just. Are you talking about like actual physical books?
Yes, now, I like books. I like books, and I think people should buy books. They should read books. And they should pass books on to other people and get them interested in books and just get more people reading. What's disrespectful about that, John?
Well, that, now you threw it back in my face. All right. Well, great. Great. Anyway. Okay. Well, Murr, what is your pick this week? Do you want me to go first so you can think about it for a minute?
Yes.
Okay. That's why I made Patrick go first, but then he liked that thing where like he didn't really pick anything. So
yes, I did.
Well, I'll go next then. I'm going to pick an album this week. I know another surprise for you, Patrick. I'm going to pick an album. But this album is one of my like early influences as a musician. And I think most people are pretty familiar with him. And his name is Joe Satriani, and he's a guitar player. And he puts out, mostly instrumental albums. And his most important, most well-known release is probably Surfing with the Alien, which for geeks out there who maybe aren't familiar with Joe Satriani, that is the one that has the picture of the Silver Surfer on the cover, which I don't know how he really he must have paid a lot of money to get that picture on that album cover, but
you'd have to get a license for that, from Marvel, and that's not easy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Kind of looking back, I'm thinking like, boy, that must have cost something, you know, to get that. But so he was a pretty influential guitar player, certainly the first sort of instrumental guitar player to have a lot of popularity, where his albums and singles actually like got played on the radio and you know, made money, which sure. was that stuff. And he's just basically put out albums every 2 years since then. So he's got a million albums out. And I've kept up with most of them, but I think kind of how we are with musicians, and I don't know how you guys are with people who you consider favorites, whether they're authors or musicians or directors of movies or what have you. But when you have someone that's pretty prolific, and I think if you're an artist yourself to some capacity, I think, I know for me, I'm always searching for new things. So I'm always listening to lots of different music. So artists who I even consider sort of my favorites, I may miss an album or two. You know, I may just be like, oh, they've put out three albums and I haven't really heard any of those three albums. So Satriani is kind of one of those people for me. Like, I always like everything I hear, but I may have missed an album or two along the way. And so my pick is his most recent album, which is called Unstoppable Momentum, which came out last year. And I really like it because he seems to have taken a more melodic approach with this album. Yeah. There's still the shredding solos and everything, but I feel like sometimes with Satriani albums, sometimes he gets a little clever for his own good and just tries to be a little too fancy or a little too weird. And I like weird and fancy, but a lot of times I just want to hear a good tune. And there's some really just good melodic instrumental guitar tunes on this. So really good. So
okay. So yes. John, before you go back to Murr, since you gave me shit over my pick, okay. I'm going to throw one out there that's in line with yours. Jimmy D-Lane.
Jimmy D-Lane. Okay.
Do you know Jimmy D-Lane?
I don't.
Okay. So he was born, he's the son of Jimmy Rogers, who was a chess blues musician. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in the presence of people like Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Albert King. He played for President Clinton when the president in, I think, like the late 90s for him. He did an album with Double Trouble called It's Time, because so many people associate his guitar playing and his music with Stevie Ray Vaughan. They feel like they go hand in hand together. So if you're a fan of Stevie Ray Vaughan, you'll like Jimmy D-Lane.
Cool. Cool. And so he's been putting out albums for a while too, so there's probably a lot to dig.
There's at least four that I'm aware of. The one that I'm thinking of is called It's Time, and he did it with Double Trouble. And when I first heard it, I thought it was like a lost Stevie Ray Vaughan album.
Cool. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, for mm-hmm. sure, for sure. And I was just thinking of Archangels the other day. I think they might have came up on one of my sort of a random playlist the other day. So that's another Double Trouble, the Stevie Ray Vaughan's rhythm section with what are the guys' names? Doyle Bromhill and Charlie Dixon is the guy in New York. I think that's his name.
Well, and Double Trouble even did a tour with Kenny Wayne Shepherd years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's where I first saw them doing that kind of collaboration stuff.
Cool. Cool. Okay, Murr, are you ready now for your pick?
I am ready.
Okay.
I am trying to read some more YA these days and learn a little bit more about that genre. So I am reading Independent Study, which is the testing number 2 by Joelle. I'm going to butcher her last name. Charbonneau?
Sure.
French. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's about a very interesting dystopia where the brightest kids are sent. This is the second book, but the first book, the testing, is the brightest kids are sent to the testing where they get tested before university, but no one knows what the testing is because those who've come out of the testings have had their memories erased. And our hero, of course, gets picked for the testing, and she's all excited because she gets to go to the university, and only kids who go to the university are the big leaders in the world. And her father brings her aside and he says, you know, I've been having some nightmares ever since some testing, and I don't think it's very good. I'm just warning you, be prepared. And it turns out to be quite awful. And it's one of those futuristic dystopias that I don't want to pick apart too much because I'm enjoying it, but I'm not quite sure how the logic would hold up in reality, but I'm still having fun with it. I like dystopians. I admit it.
She's an author that I've been interested in for a while because I don't know if these are YA books too, but I believe, and I think it's the same author, because I think she's written some sort of music-related books too, where she has one about a choir or a choral thing. So I don't know if she's a musician herself and has written a little bit about that. I don't know if her other books are YA or just general adult fiction too, but she's someone I've been wanting to check out her books for a while. So now I'm going to have to go and check out some of her books too. So thank you for the the recommend. So what's the name of the book you're reading right now again? Just so people
Independent Study.
Very good. Okay, well, let's get on to our main topic today. And as we mentioned at the early part of the show, The Ghost Train to New Orleans is coming out, which is book 2 in Murr's series. So what I thought I think would be kind of a good place to start is, you know, why don't you talk a little bit about the sort of the whole idea for the series to begin with? I mean, did the ideas behind this sort of spring forth as like, yes, this is going to be a series? Was this just something you just started writing out of the blue one day? So how does this get from, you know, at idea stage to now you're having 2 books in the series out?
Well, we were doing a, RPG writers back in 2005, we're doing a book for Hurricane Katrina relief. And we just decided to do a book about New Orleans. And you could write anything you wanted, as long as it could be used in a game. And it featured New Orleans. And so I just got the idea that I had a tour guide who loved her job so much that when she died, she kept doing it. And so she would be showing people around New Orleans and showing them where the best crypts to rent out would be and where to go if you know, you accidentally get an arm ripped off or something. And it was just a really short story, but I liked the idea so much I carried it with me. And so then I took it to New York and wrote a book, The Shambling Guide to New York City, and I turned it into a human is desperate to get a job in publishing. She has experience writing travel books, and she stumbles across a brand new company that is going to be writing travel books for monsters. And because, you know, if you're a vampire and you want to visit New York, you need to know where to go to get food, how strict the laws are, if you kill somebody and eat them, what will the consequence be if you're caught, that kind of thing. And essentially, you know, what humans need to know when they go to a new city, and except for the eating people. But what turned it into a series is that, you know, my characters can go to any city in the world and try to write a travel guide, but, you know, because every city in the world is inhabited by interesting creatures, she's going to run up against very odd things and have adventures. So I do have an arc in mind, but I'm not contracted for any more books after this. So please go buy them. Then we will see what the arc is.
Do you know, when I first heard the title for the first book, in my head, I heard someone just saying, and it was Murr's voice, but I heard someone saying, "And we're walking."
Ha. And we're shambling, yes.
When you were saying that, you know, this can work in any city, and I haven't watched, well, I don't know, I probably watched like the first season of it like 15 years ago, but I was thinking like, I'm like, so your books are kind of like, you know, MTV's Real World, but just with monsters.
That was throwing a bunch of people in the same house, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
True story. Yeah.
No, it's just they basically, you know, just go to a different city every year. And then it's just, you know, put a bunch of people who are in their 20s and unstable together in a house. And what's funny about the Real World was that I remember watching the first season of that, which was in New York. This is like 90. I think it was early in college. This is a long time ago. And those people they were just sort of artsy fartsy people. Like there was like an actor and there was a musician and there was a writer and there was, you know, and they got filmed and the show became a huge hit, but those people were not aware that it was going to be a big hit. So they were kind of normal-ish people that just had normal people drama in the house. But then after that, it just, people who sort of applied to be on that show knew that they were going to be kind of famous because of this. So they sort of played up their type, you know, whatever their type was going to be. So it was just like, you have the really aggressive guy and you have this person and you have, you know, it was just like there were sort of types that they would play up. And then it wasn't so interesting after that. But
and
sorry.
Thus birthed reality TV.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I think that was sort of the first of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan of MasterChef, and it's like you would watch, you know, of course it's aired months after it's filmed, so you have these two people yelling at each other and talking off camera on the interviews how much they hate each other, and then you go to Twitter and they're just, you know, one of them's like, "Hey, I'm going to be in Philly this weekend. Can I drop by? Yeah, come on, we'll have a barbecue." And it's just, man.
Well, and I always wonder with those kinds of things, you know, if you ever hear sort of the behind the scenes of any of that kind of reality stuff, you know, so much of it is, you know, cooked sort of after the fact, where, you know, they'll have like a close up of a person making sort of a disgruntled face.
Yes.
That you think is a result of something that someone just said, but it chances are it probably was not, didn't have anything to do with that. They just sort of panned to that, and then they put like sort of the dramatic music. And so a lot of it is sort of, you know, sort of put together in editing more than actual reality. But yeah, so sorry to compare your book to an MTV show from 20 years ago. My bad. Sorry. So with this one, so what do you have coming up with in terms of, you know, where are you going to be going to any cons to kind of promote the book, or what's sort of on your agenda for now, Murr?
I'm going to be doing RT this May, which is the Romantic Times Convention, which I'm very nervous about, very excited about. It's Romantic Times is branching out into urban fantasy, paranormal romance, and such. And a whole bunch of authors that I really respect are going. And the ones who aren't going tell me that it's awesome and I totally should go. I'm up for an RT award, which is another reason I'm going. And it's in New Orleans, which is kind of obvious. I should go there and have a presence. And then in June, I believe, we have a local con called Contemporal, and I'll probably be going to that. I don't know if I'll be a guest or not, but I'll be attending at least. And then I'm teaching at the Shared Worlds workshop for teens in July, which isn't really a place people can come see me. But if you have a kid and they're into writing, check it out.
And, is that the one that the Vandermeers run?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, they've been doing that for what, about 5 years or so now. I feel like I've been seeing that for a while, and that just seems really, really cool. Can you imagine going to that when you were a teenager?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. And then I'm going to LunCon, the WorldCon, in August. So that's a couple of big trips and not so many little cons. I might be doing RavenCon, but I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. And, you know, so you have the Ghost Train in New Orleans coming out. And we also know that you were involved with the Women Destroy Science Fiction, but really Women Destroy All Genres now. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your involvement with that.
I'm going to be their podcast host. They do, you know, they buy their stories and they present them, I believe, one a week is how Lightspeed works. And then they usually podcast two of those stories, and I'm going to be the host of that podcast instead of their usual host. So I'm looking forward to that. I was very honored when they invited me to be part of Destruction of Science Fiction.
Well, it just seems like such a cool. We had a Wendy Wagner on a recent episode, and it's I don't know. I'm just sort of delighted to see that happening, and really happy to see people in the community just really not only back up, but just sort of show, you know, all the kind of ugliness that sort of spurred that on.
Yeah.
You know, just to see that this positive thing is the response to it. It makes me very proud to be a part of this community, that this is the response and not just more bitterness and ugliness, but like, no, we're going to do something really cool. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. I was very excited to hear they were going ahead with it. And I know how most crowdfunding works, and I was pretty sure they were not going to get to they got to the level that where they destroyed horror as well, but then they were like $10,000 away from destroying fantasy, and I thought there's no way they're going to get that far in the past, like in the last 8 days. And they not only hit the goal, but they made like over 51,000 total.
Yeah.
And then they announced Queers Destroy Fantasy as well. And that's going to be edited by Shauna McGuire. So nice. I'm really excited to see that one.
That's awesome.
That it's well, and it just, you know, with everything with Kickstarter, it really is, you know, it's kind of, once you get like that momentum going, it's then it's just amazing to see all this. And one of the things that Wendy talked about was they didn't really initially have all those stretch goals. Like they had to figure them out, because the response was so positive from the beginning that they had to sort of add that stuff. And I think they added some amazing things, including your involvement in it. So that's super cool. So you got that you're going to be doing, and you got your book coming out. So What's next for Mer Lafferty after that? Like what are you working on another book? Like where are you headed after all this?
No pressure or anything.
No pressure. I'm actually in a kind of, tell me if I'm wrong about this, John, a fugue state, mm-hmm. where I just finished a whole bunch of really big projects, like my MFA and a book. And, I turned in my work for the Torment video game. And I don't have a whole lot in front of me. It's kind of scary and exciting. I'm working on a new story, sort of a fantasy based on ancient Rome, and I've got a Heaven novella to finish, which I've promised for far too long, and I'm really kind of just waiting now. I've got the irons in the fire, but I don't know which one I'm going to take out. How's that for a metaphor? Does that work?
Yes.
That works for me. Well, and I think, you know, when you have so much on your plate for so long, sometimes you need to clear everything off the plate. And then you have to just sort of be a human being for a little while and maybe not force yourself to do anything and just sort of maybe live your life and kind of do your thing for a bit. And I don't know if you're an artistic person like you are, like, it'll just come, and then you'll be super busy again, probably.
Yes, very likely. I'm hoping to do some exciting stuff with the podcast this month, so we'll see.
Yeah, and you know, I know for me, like I had gone through a period where I was like just really just second guessing everything I was doing and why I was doing any of this in the first place. And what I've kind of come to is that, you know, there's lots of ways to approach all of this stuff. And I'm just trying to, and I think maybe turning 40 or coming up on turning 40 before I actually turn it, but I just realized, well, I do this, I do these artistic things and I make music, and it has to be a part of my life. It doesn't have to be at odds with my life, which I think if you're somebody, and I imagine a lot of people listening to this are like this, where they're writers or whatever their pursuit is, and it's hard for them to feel good about writing if they have to do their day job. And it's always like, well, I'm going to write so I don't have to do my day job. But I think the reality is you have to figure out a way to love it and to do it and to make it fold into your life. And I think that's something that I've kind of finally figured out, as much as I can figure it out for now. And a lot of it is just making time every day and making sure that you work on it every day. And don't worry about, you know, having a weekend where maybe you go crazy and you do 20 hours on it in a Saturday, and then you don't touch it again for 2 weeks, but just hacking away at different things. And I know for me too, the other thing that has really been productive is having a couple of different things to work on at a time. Because for me in the past, I'd always have whatever the most recent song I was working on, and I would just obsessively work on that until it was finished, which would often be like a good month or two, and I'd be sick of it and I'd be sick of everything. So now I always have like four or five things that I'm working on, and when I start getting a little burned by something, I move to something else for a little while, and that's been working well for me. So I don't know if that's how you always have so many deadlines and different things that you're doing. I imagine there's a little bit of that goes on for you too, Mer.
Sure. And I think what I'm getting out of what you're saying is essentially the journey is as important as the end, in that you need to fit your creative stuff in your everyday life so you can make it part of your life instead of consider it as a end goal of, well, someday I will have the time to write that novel, or I'm going to futz around with this one little thing and someday I will really make it big. And forgetting that it's a little bit at a time. And I think that's what's really been helping me out, is knowing it's a little bit at a time. And as long as I can, all I have to do is write 250 words a day. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll write more. Often I'll write more. But sometimes if it's like 10:30 and I think, I don't want to write today, I think, it's just 250 words. If I just shut up whining, I can get it done. Mm-hmm. And
Well, two recent examples of that really hit home for me. I know that's Cory Doctorow's method, is I think he writes a page a day. I think that's mm-hmm. what he's always done. And I mean, that's his fiction. I know, you know, he writes for Boing Boing and does nonfiction and things like that too. But in terms of whatever novel he's working on, he writes a page a day, and he's always got a book out. So like it works for him. And
yeah,
another person who really kind of inspired me with this recently is Jamie Todd Rubin, where he just seems to be quite prolific with the, he's mostly a short story writer. And, you know, he's got a family and he does a lot of other things, but he wrote this blog post about how he just makes sure he writes for at least, he has like a word count goal, but basically he's like, I can usually hit that word count goal in 20 minutes. So just as long as I can get in a room by myself for 20 minutes every day, I can hit my word count goal. And he's been very prolific. So I'm like, well, everybody could do 20 minutes. That's not so hard. So, you know, just find that time and just keep hacking away. That works for me. And it sounds like it's working a bit for you, where you say you just get up and you just hit that 250 words. And maybe some days it's not the best thing, but at least your muscle's not going to atrophy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then some days when you don't feel like it, if you sit down to do your 250 words, then maybe you just kind of get onto something and you write really good stuff that day, which you may not have written anything if you had done that. So,
exactly.
Patrick, what are your thoughts on your process? Because I know you always have like word count goals and things like that. So I don't know if this is sort of similar stuff for you.
I just try to write every day. That's it. I've kind of thrown out my word count goals because I wasn't hitting them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
My job is more intensive than it used to be, so I'm having to do more and I'm burning more energy. So my thing is every day I bring my laptop to work and I make a point of leaving and going off somewhere and wolfing down whatever it is I'm eating for lunch, and then trying to use that 45 minutes just to put words on paper.
Yeah, that's the way to go. That's what I've been doing. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't even know there was a 4 o'clock in the morning.
There is. I get up and I eat breakfast and I go to the gym and I work out for about an hour and I take a shower there. And then I go to a Starbucks and I'm there for about an hour before I have to go to work. And I work on whatever composing that I can do in that hour. And so that way I usually get it in the morning. And if I have time during my lunch or at night, I do that too, but some days I don't have time during lunch or at night because shit comes up. So if I can get it in the morning, then I do. So it's a little insane waking up that early, but I get it done and I'm much happier for it. So that's the way that kind of works for me. But
what time do you go to bed?
About 10 o'clock usually.
Which is why we no longer record on Tuesday nights, because by the time we were done, John was dead.
Oh yeah, I was fried. I was not a happy individual. So I don't get enough sleep. I should probably try to go to bed even earlier than that, but I usually do get about 6 hours, which, you know, it's better than nothing. It's better than 4 hours, which you can survive on 6 hours. Should I try to get 7 or 8? Yes. And then I'm sort of getting in bed earlier than that as life goes on, because you have to also sort of conform a bit to your kids' sleeping schedule too. So, you know, so that's kind of that. But very cool, Mar. So, you know, as we kind of start to Patrick, do you have any particular things you want to ask Mar while we have her on the line? I mean, obviously you guys communicate quite frequently. But I don't, you know, a lot of that sort of business related things. So I don't know if there's anything that you feel like asking Mar that I haven't yet.
Not off the top of my head. I feel like I'm more in tune with what Mer does, just because I pay attention to Mer's website and to things that are going on, because I want to know when I have to, you know, edit a podcast or something for her. So
it'd be nice if I could get that on a schedule, wouldn't it?
Hey, you know what? I like what you've been doing, and I think the people who listen to your podcast are liking it as well. You have one of the longest running podcasts out there. You've been doing it for a very long time, and you have to be able to change things up to keep it fresh for yourself.
It gets
boring.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, it gets boring after a while. You're doing the same old stuff. I mean, that's why we've changed. We haven't even been doing this anywhere near as long as you have, and I think we've changed our format like 4 times.
Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So I that's why I've said I've been doing these little things on SF Signal where I talk about, you know, the Hugo Awards and eligibility and all these great things that are out there. And I've said ever since they started the podcast category that Mer Lafferty needs to be on that ballot because of everything that she's done. She has basically brought podcasting to genre fiction, as far as I'm concerned. And it's one of those things that sticks in my gut that she doesn't get the credit that she deserves for that and doesn't get the recognition. So my only thing is, Mer's been doing this for so long. She's always constantly changing. She's evolving. She's evolved the whole podcast thing. And so I don't really have anything to ask her. I just want her to know that I appreciate her.
Aww.
Well, we're not going to end any better than that. There's no nicer word. Let's end with a warm fuzzy then. That's good.
Yes.
So Mer, so why don't you, so we talked all about your different things that are out there, and I will say to everybody, go and buy The Shambling Guide to New York City. It's available right now as we speak, and probably when you hear this, The Ghost Train in New Orleans will be available too. So why don't you go ahead and buy that? So then that way, when you're done with The Shambling Guide, book 2 is there. It is there.
That's right.
For you. So why don't you go and buy both of them right now? And Mer, why don't you tell everyone your website and your Twitter and all that kind of stuff where they can check you out?
I am at merverse.com. And my favorite social network is Twitter by far. I hate Facebook, and I'm on there for necessity, not enjoyment. So Twitter is Mighty Mer. And that's really the best place to find me. I'm on a whole bunch of other ones, but I forget about them, and so I don't update my Tumblr or Pinterest or what are the other ones? I forget. Those are the basic two that I don't that I ignore. Yeah. I ignore those harder than any of the other ones.
Cool. Very good. So that's where you can find Mer. For me, again, you could check out music that I have available over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And Patrick, what do you have going on?
Well, I did want to let Mer know that we recently had Matt Wallace on the podcast.
Yay!
And as part of that, he did get a bad cop question. So I wanted to read you the question, and you can take it as the good cop.
Okay.
You're a good cop. I'm an author who has never been published and don't have a blog, Twitter, or Facebook account and have never been to a convention or workshop. I have 6 novels that I've written on my mom's old typewriter. None of them have ever been read by other people or been edited. All are Harry Potter / 50 Shades of Grey fan fiction mashups around 130,000 words each. Should I just put them up on Amazon now and make a lot of money and get rich, or try to get them published traditionally?
No, I think you should send them all to me because I want to read them.
It was the first time ever I think Matt Wallace was speechless.
We had a good time with Matt. I was happy to get Matt on the podcast. So
yes, so that was a lot of fun. Anyway, ATFMB is my website. It's also my Facebook and my Twitter, ATFMB. And I don't have a lot going on. I just keep pushing away on blog posts, and I've got the SF Signal podcast. When Mer has a full episode of I Should Be Writing, I typically am the one who edits that for her. So always go there and check that out. No problem. And as I've said before, I am the official podcaster at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And that's April 25th through 27th. If you are an author looking for a conference that will put you face to face with editors and agents and authors where you can actually ask them direct questions about the publishing industry and about writing in general, this might be the conference for you. So go and check that out. Pikes Peak Writers.
Very good. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss her each night and day? I know I'm not wrong, because the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. Well, I drive through hell and the pouring rain all night long. Got to get to Louisiana. Crawfish is in the bayou. You better hike, 'cause I'm gonna find y'all. Born in Louisiana, I was raised on the Texas side. Born in Louisiana, I was raised on the Texas side. That makes me a dual citizen. Everybody take a trip with me. Well, down the Mississippi, down in New Orleans. They got a honeysuckle growing on a honeysuckle vine. And love is a blooming there all the time. Wherever Southern Belle is a Mississippi queen.
Down a Mississippi, down in New Orleans.
I said, hey. And there's one thing more.
I miss the one I care for more than I miss New Orleans. More than I miss New Orleans.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.